Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can find me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know what day it is. It is Wednesday. So that means we are joined by the great Paul Bredel. You can find him on ESPN Lacrosse. You can find him on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Paul, great to be back chatting with you. How the heck are you?
I'm excellent, Andy. Always happy to be talking Packers with you.
It's fun every single time we do it. And this is an interesting game to break down.
For sure.
We've got a really interesting game coming up against the Lions. We'll get into all of that. I will start per usual with your key takeaways from this win over Jacksonville, as maybe disjointed and bizarre as it was. It was still a win. So the floor is yours.
I think the biggest thing, and you said it, I think disjointed is a great way to describe the performance that we saw from this Packers team. And I feel like to a degree, we keep going back to this, but they're finding ways to win. And that ability to do so, one, this team a year ago at this time, they were finding ways to lose these games. So the fact that they are winning them, I think shows the immense amount of growth that we know they've had over the last year. And it's not as if they're pulling these games out by relying on the same unit or even the same few players. It's each week, it feels like when one unit's struggling or things aren't going right, out of nowhere, you know, a different group comes through and helps be the catalyst to get the Packers to victory. This week against the Jaguars, it was a defense. The offense is struggling to get going early on. You have Malik Willis entering the game for Jordan Love. There's those two turnovers on the Jacksonville side of the field that puts the Packers in immediate scoring position. The offense is able to capitalize. And just like that, that's a 14-point swing, obviously, in a game that only ended up as a 3-point difference. And we go back the week prior against Houston, and the special teams unit is coming up big. The defense getting third down stops. The offense finding a way at the end of the game, even though things haven't been going well throughout, finding a way to move the ball in those crucial situations to set up the field goal opportunity. And again, as we get to the end of the season, those high leverage games, we get into the playoffs, you're playing top flight opponents, you might not always have your A game, right? Those top level teams are going to do their best to take away what you do well. So how do you counter it? How do you respond to it? Doesn't mean there aren't things to clean up. Doesn't mean that you don't want to go out and see the Packers win comfortably by 7 points, 10 points. That's absolutely what the goal is. And they're working their way towards that, obviously. But the fact that they're able to find ways to win these games, I think, is extremely valuable from an experience standpoint. When you don't want that first time you run into that situation where you get punched in the mouth or you find yourself trailing late or it's tied late, you don't want that to be the first time you run into it in week 18 or in the divisional round of the playoffs, because now there's a bit of a scrambling going on, right? Like, you're trying to figure out, all right, how do we respond in this situation? They've been in a lot of these uncomfortable situations and they found a way to pull it out.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. And one of the things I tried to articulate this in the post game show, but it's one of those things, like, when we think of complementary football, we think of the offense and the defense and the special teams setting themselves up and playing that cohesive game of football that everything sort of flows together perfectly. I think that's kind of the way we think about it a little bit. And sometimes it's not exactly that way. And the way I kind of define the complementary football in this game is what, or maybe complementary is not the right word, but just the one side sort of picking up the slack for the other side. And when the offense was struggling in the first half in this game, where things maybe could have spiraled out of control if the defense was not able to pick up the slack in that situation, the defense said, "We got this. Don't worry. We know you're not able to punch in some of those scores for touchdowns. We're just going to keep doing our job." When Jordan Love throws the interception, Xavier McKinney takes it right back. Like, they handled things for the offense when they were struggling. And vice versa, sort of at the end of the game, when the defense was struggling and they were struggling to get off the field and they were giving up points, the offense was like, "Don't worry, we got this. And we're going to go get a big Josh Jacobs touchdown run. And we're going to go get a huge Jaden Reed throw at the end of the game to set up a game-winning field goal attempt." So it wasn't necessarily complimentary in the normal way that we kind of think about it, but it was when one side was struggling, the other side had their back and vice versa. And it did enough to ultimately pick up that victory. And I think there is a lot to take away from that. And as you do get to this very tough stretch of games coming up, which we'll talk about in a little bit, these experiences are going to be invaluable. And for, I think the crazy thing too here, Paul, is for as young of a team as this is, what they have gone through since the beginning of last year, really up until now, and just some of the, you know, the games that they have had to experience, some of the losing streaks, the adversity, coming back in games, having games against bad opponents where they don't look the best, having games against good opponents where they look really good. Like they've kind of run the gamut of almost every sort of game experience that you can have, going down 28-0 to the Vikings. Like there is a lot of valuable lessons and takeaways for a young team in those situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw the Josh Jacobs interview after the game, and he had mentioned something to the effect of that when Malik Willis came in, I think it was Tucker Kraft who said, you know, hey, we've been here before, we've done this, let's just go out and do it again. Because you go through these experiences, you go through these challenges that the Packers have had throughout this first half of the season. And again, when you run into it at a different point, there's a bit of, you know, calmness, perhaps for lack of a better term, because you've been there, you've experienced it, you know what you need to do in that situation. And I think that's a great point about the complementary football to a degree and picking up the other side of the ball. And Matt LaFleur talked about this all week too. You can't pay attention to that Jacksonville Jaguars record. I know they're 2-5 going into the game. You noted how well Trevor Lawrence played in that game. We saw Brian Thomas. We saw Tank Bigsby. We saw the play of their two edge rushers on the defensive side of the ball. Like there's a lot of talent on that team. And so they credit to them as well for finding ways to stress the Packers defense to make the offense uncomfortable.
The NFL is weird. Like, if you'd have told me that CJ Stroud had the game that Trevor Lawrence did the other day, I'd have been like, yep, that sounds about right. And if you would have said that Trevor Lawrence had the game that CJ Stroud did, I'd be like, yep, that sounds about right. But like the talent is all over. You don't know what you're going to get on any given week from any given team. We saw that against the Ravens and the Browns this past week as well. And I just thought Trevor Lawrence was fantastic in this game. And sometimes you're going to run into those games where, you know what, one of their key players has a really impressive day. And I thought the more and more I watched this game, especially back on the All-22, I thought Trevor Lawrence was fantastic and showed all the reasons he was the number one pick, why there was so much hype of him coming out of college. And you kind of wanted to get out of that game with him still maybe being a little bit more in that, you know, all right, is he still the guy sort of land? But you know what? He went out and he balled out. There's a play I posted. He just got smashed by, I think it was Enigbari and LVN. Like it was like the Ninja Turtles, like, you know, bashing the shell like simultaneously from both sides. It was beautiful. And Lawrence delivers an absolute dime on the play, gets right back up. Like the toughness, the composure, some of the throws that he made, just some big time stuff from Lawrence in the game. And, you know, kudos to Jacksonville and for him for putting on that performance, and Green Bay still finding a way to get away with the win. One of the ways that the offense was able to find a way to win was that huge play at the end to Jaden Reed. We talked about a little bit of how they sort of drew this up on the sideline to some extent. There was a play that they were looking to potentially put in through the course of the week. They didn't, but I know you wrote about this in great detail, so I will give you the floor on this one. Your thoughts on how they were able to put this play in at the last moment to come up with really a game-winning play.
Yeah, as the post-game press conferences were unfolding and you're listening to Willis, you're listening to Fleur talk, it just added like multiple layers to what was already just an absolutely impressive story that has been Malik Willis this season. Obviously, stepping into the game, and as you talked about, you know, he's not getting starting reps during the week of practice when Jordan Love's there. He's working against the scout team. He talked about the importance of getting the mental reps throughout the week just to prepare himself as best as he can. LaFleur on Monday talked about post-practice getting work in with Sean Mannion, with Tom Clements, all those additional things just to put himself in the best position that if he's called upon, he can go out there and perform at a high level, which he did. But yeah, that play to Jaden Reed, you know, you're watching it live and you see a wide open throw, but there was so much that went into that play beforehand to even set up the opportunity. As you mentioned, LaFleur said it wasn't in their game plan. They talked about it on Tuesday, but they thought, nah, we're not going to put that in. So they didn't practice it at all throughout the week. Earlier in the game, they run a quarterback keeper with Malik Willis, and Jason Vrabel, the passing game coordinator, on that play said, hey, the Jaguars gave us a look to where that play would work really, really well. So they talked about it. They decided to put it in. And prior to the throw to Jaden Reed, there were two other occasions where the Packers came out in an alignment that they thought would be conducive to get the safety to rotate down to open up that opportunity. And on those previous two occasions, the Jaguars didn't bite. They stayed in their original alignment. So now, fast forward, it's the end of the game. They have two plays called. There's the original play, and then the can play is that play that they drew up for Jaden Reed. as Malik Willis is under center, the safeties rotate around, or the defensive backs rotate around, gives them the look. Willis cans the play, and it works out just perfectly as the Packers had drawn it up. So again, so many layers into what makes that entire play so impressive. The no practice time for Willis, that play wasn't a part of the original game plan. The Packers setting it up earlier on in the game, trying to get that look from Jacksonville, giving Malik Willis the autonomy to say, hey, if they're in this look, we trust you. Can it? Go for the throw. Just so many layers to just, again, what's been a really, really impressive story that Willis is.
It really is. And I'm like right there with you of just the, just giving Willis that freedom and ability to make that call at the line of scrimmage. Now, obviously this is not a ridiculously hard tell, right? Mm-hmm. This is a, all right, is the safety rotating down into the box? And to be clear, like we have seen teams rotate a safety down into the box and then fly them back mm-hmm. out, right? So just because you get that tell doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you're going to get post snap, but they're asking him to read the safety. Does the safety rotate down and come into the box and you get that single high look? And if you do, we're going to be in a great situation. The other thing too, is if you can something, the defense could go back and reverse mm-hmm. it as well. Apparently maybe Jacksonville doesn't do that, or certainly at least they did not do it on that play. But I love the fact that Green Bay called it on multiple occasions, waiting for the right situation to happen, but also knowing that, hey, we might not get the look that we want. So we have to have something else baked in where we can either just run the football or get to something else on the play because it may not work the way that we are expecting it to. So having that, you know, sort of if then statement built into the whole entire situation is super, super smart. And the fact that, yeah, I think other teams would maybe call it once, maybe twice, and be like, all right, well, we're not getting the look that we want. What are we doing here? And I think mm-hmm. in that situation too, it's second down and you're in such a unique situation because, you know, if they don't get the look there, now you've run the ball two straight plays. If they don't get anything on that play, you're looking at a third and long backed up in your own situation. Jacksonville potentially, you know, calls a timeout there and they could get the ball back in regulation. Like, it's just so many different things could happen, but Green Bay had everything baked in. They trusted their young quarterback. Kudos to Jason Vrabel for, mm-hmm. and this is actually a compliment to Matt LaFleur too, that like there are, I guarantee you there are play callers and coaches that the last thing they want is somebody calling, coming down and being like, hey, I've got this play we should draw up and we should run. But like Matt LaFleur gives the autonomy to his coaches, if they see something, to come to him with those potential options and situations. And then for him to be like, yep, let's do it. Get everyone on the same page. And then the offense to go out and execute it, Tucker Kraft to execute a big block. To your point, the layers of how mm-hmm. that had to succeed is just such a beautiful onion to peel it apart. Is. And it is a really fun story. And that when you talk about organizational success and how a coach, like it's the attention to detail. It's the stuff that for the most part would go unnoticed. And again, all the autonomy he gives his coaches, the autonomy he gives the players, the check at the line of scrimmage, the faith that he has in his backup quarterback to make that throw in a clutch moment, just all of it together is picture perfect. And I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, on Monday, LaFleur is asked about that, because obviously, as you were alluding to, you're in a situation where if you're on the ball, you get stuffed. If you go for that throw and they're positioned well and it's an incomplete pass, that you're giving the Jaguars the ball back with, you know, under a minute, but a decent chunk of that minute remaining. And Fleur said, obviously, he's very mindful of that, but called it a calculated risk. You know, that they had, if they got that look, they felt confident about their ability for how they had set it up. And obviously in Malik Willis and Jaden Reed and Tucker Kraft with the block, the ability to sell the play, that, yeah, there's some risk to it, but you're putting yourself in an advantageous situation to take advantage of the opportunity. And again, to your point about Vrabel noticing that, the Packers implementing it, I mean, throughout the last year in particular, I feel like we've heard a lot of that from the floor, like John Dunn, the tight ends coach, coming up with a play on a couple plays on the sidelines. Some of the runs that they utilized in weeks 2 and 3 when Willis was the quarterback, like that was Adam Stenovich and the other offensive position coaches throughout the week putting together these game plans. So Matt LaFleur is at the helm, obviously. He's the play caller, obviously. But this very much, this offense is a complete, total team effort.
Hello, friends. We are quickly approaching the halfway point of the regular season already, which seems absolutely absurd to say. But despite time flying by fast, there's still plenty of season left, which means there's plenty of Prize Picks winning to be done. Now, with Prize Picks, you can make your selections in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long. And right now, when you sign up on Prize Picks, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It's guaranteed. Now, of course, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. In week 9, I'm going with Amon-Ra St. Brown against Green Bay. Yes, I know we don't want him to do well, but he seemingly always does well against Green Bay. And I'm also going with Christian Watson against Detroit. Finally, I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes to have a huge game against Tampa on Monday Night Football. Now, there are plenty of options to choose from, but just remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
I got to overhear a small conversation in training camp. Obviously, can't quote the I don't even know the details to quote if I wanted to, but it was just this really cool moment of like Steno and Vrabel and Dunn, and they were all together and they were just like nerding out about potential things that they could do based on what like Jeff Hafley was showing them in practice. And so like, it was just like a really cool conversation of like, yeah, I think we could potentially pull this off. And it, like, you could just tell like the absolute beautiful nerdiness of like wanting to figure out the X's and O's and how to place a player in a certain situation to set him up for success. And you can just tell they all have that DNA in them. And again, I can't give Matt LaFleur enough credit for allowing them that autonomy to come up with those ideas, those plays, and say like, hey, if you got a good idea, I want to hear it. And he's very open to that. And it paid off huge in this specific situation. Speaking of organizational success, yes, the coaching staff and all the things we just talked about, a huge piece of that. The front office and what they've been able to do. I mean, you just think about this game, Paul. Josh Jacobs, we talked about putting the team on his back in this game. Xavier McKinney comes up with another interception. Malik Willis and his unbelievable story, and you know, winning three games is basically the backup quarterback so far already this season. Brandon McManus, it's another game-winning field goal and is perfect on the day on kicks. You have Edgerrin Cooper coming up with the big force fumble and you know, the sack on the play. And again, the play that Devontae Wyatt's able to recover the fumble on that one. Evan Williams was obviously a huge piece of this before he ended up going out with, and you could tell the difference when Evan Williams was out of that game. Those are all players that were just acquired in some way, shape, or form through the course of this last offseason or just recently even. And to have that ability and in all different avenues. Chris Brooks, another one like that's had a major role in this game that I want to talk about as well. Guy that they just found off of, you know, Miami cut him. They put him on the practice squad, immediately got him to the active roster because they recognized what he could do. Whether it's finding a guy off of, you know, some team's cutdowns, whether it's spending a huge free agent contract on a Xavier McKinney or a Josh Jacobs, finding guys on day two, day three of the draft, spending a seventh round pick in a trade right before the start of the season, going and finding a kicker off the street, like all of the avenues are utilized and it all comes together where if you don't have that group of players that we just talked about, like this is a nightmare game. Like those are the players that ultimately kind of won you this game. And that's all Goody, the front office, the pro personnel, the scouting staff, finding, evaluating, and then again, the coaching staff integrating them into this offense and defense and special teams respectively.
Yeah, it's been really remarkable. You look at, all right, how do you move on from a future Hall of Famer and just navigate that transition to where you are now? One, the time frame, as short as it is, and as smoothly as it's been. Again, a lot of factors in play. but you hit on your draft picks, you bring in the right free agents, and that's what Brian Gutekunst has done. I mean, these last two draft classes have been, you know, excellent and immediate contributors. And I think a big part of this growth development that we've seen from this Packers team, and it really started last year, was the competition aspect of it.
Yeah.
We saw it at the receiver position, obviously relying on young guys, the tight end position, another position group, we were relying on young guys last year. And Gutekunst talked about it throughout the offseason, you know, seeing that competition, those guys pushing each other, making each other better along the offensive line as well last year with that in-season rotation. I think that was a big, big catalyst for obviously their growth last year, but how Brian Gutekunst wanted to build out the roster this season and maybe a little more, heavier reliance on the young players that are on this roster to give them that opportunity, because Matt LaFleur says it over and over, best way to get experience is to get in games, get in there and play. And so that's what they're doing. And again, you got to hit on the picks. Your coaches have to put them in positions to be successful, utilize their strengths, all that stuff. But man, I mean, like you mentioned yesterday, the Malik Willis stepping in, McKinney's pick, Edrin Cooper's forced fumble, Josh Jacobs taking over in the second half. Like, those are all players who weren't here in February. And that's a game that without them, maybe even one of them, that they don't win this game.
Yeah, it's really incredible. And again, to do it in all different avenues, it's not just first round picks, or it's not just huge free agent signings. He has an unbelievable ability to find players off of practice squad. Eric Wilson's a guy they find off a practice squad in New Orleans, journeyman, special teams guy. Mm-hmm. He fills in and does such an amazing job. Like, just, it doesn't seem to matter where they come from. They find a way to evaluate the talent, bring them in, and then have them be successful to a level that, look at Malik Willis, was never in Tennessee, and he comes to Green Bay and immediately finds that success. Again, that is evaluating talent from a personnel side, and then the coaches developing them and getting the most out of them. It's a really cool marriage, and it's something that's working incredibly well in Green Bay right now. Speaking of, being able to evaluate, find talent, I think you can kind of sum it up in the running back room with the way that they have developed the talent. Where, again, you get a big free agent signing to Josh Jacobs. Chris Brooks, we talked about, just a guy they find after Miami cut him, put on the practice squad, called up Emmanuel Wilson, undrafted free agent. And then I think at some point here, we'll get Marshawn Lloyd back too, who I think a really talented third round pick that they're still very excited about. I talked to this with Justice Mosqueda a little bit yesterday, but how do you see this playing out when Lloyd is back and having these four running backs on the roster? Do they have to let go of one? Like, it's an interesting roster dynamic, but I don't see any way that they let go of any of these four running backs right now.
I don't think so either. And I wrote about Chris Brooks. It's up on ESPNLacrosse.com. And as I was writing that, I was thinking through this question, because from a pure roster construction standpoint, keeping a fourth running back just doesn't feel necessary whatsoever. Right. But to your point, like, who are you letting go from that room? You're not. I mean, Chris Brooks he's been instrumental in these end of game situations the last 2 weeks on their 2 minute drive against the Houston Texans. Three straight plays with Packers on the 37 yard line, right on the cusp of field goal range. He picks up blitzes twice on a linebacker, twice on a safety. Two of those three plays ended up in completion. So at a minimum, if he falters, if he doesn't come through on one of those plays, it's a much longer field goal. And who knows, maybe you're knocked out of field goal range. End of game against the Jaguars, they give him the ball. Again, he hasn't scored an NFL touchdown, but knows the situation, gets down at the 4 yard line. They run the clock down. I mean, he has been so instrumental in these last two games, and the Packers putting him and trusting him in those pivotal situations. So again, he's developing into a pretty defined role within this offense. And while Marshawn Lloyd brings you this level of juice as a ball carrier, he's still a rookie, and he's a rookie who's missed a lot of time. So when it comes to him seeing playing time, I mean, compared to Brooks, compared to Emmanuel Wilson, my guess is their coaching staff isn't going to have that same level of trust in those pass protection situations, just because he's a rookie, and there's always going to be a transition in that regard at the running back position. But two, again, between training camp, this chunk here in the regular season, he's missed a lot of time. And I do not doubt whatsoever that he knows the playbook inside and out. But as we always hear, there's it, knowing it and then going on the field and applying it when things are moving at a million miles an hour, two completely different things. And that just comes with experience, that just comes with reps. And that's just what he's missing right now. So I think when he comes back, they do keep the four running backs on the roster because they all have defined roles. You want to try to get him some reps. And like you said, Wilson, Brooks in particular, they're playing really, really important roles in the passing game as pass catchers, pass protectors, all that.
Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by Manscaped, the global leader in men's lifestyle and grooming. Every man knows the unbeatable feeling of a fresh barbershop shave. Now, what if I told you that you no longer have to wait weeks or even months between appointments to experience it? Introducing Manscaped's newest innovation, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver, the game-changing tool that brings the luxury of a professional shave right into your home. Now, whether you're after that daily silky smooth finish, or if you prefer to maintain a rugged 5 o'clock shadow, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver is your go-to for precision and style every time. So head over to manscaped.com and join over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. I still remember going through high school and college with a crappy razor and showing up to class with toilet paper stuck to my face and trying to stop. It was an absolute nightmare. It was not a good scene. I only wish I had a Chairman Pro when I was younger. And here's the thing. The Chairman Pro isn't just for daily shaves either. It's powerful enough to tackle up to a 5-day growth, making it perfect whether you're shaving every day or just tidying up after a few days. And with up to 75 minutes of runtime on a single charge, you can take your time getting the perfect shave. So you can get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. So get 20% off and free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with a code PACKADAY at manscaped.com.
That's a crazy thing of how many different position groups we're talking about. Oh, it's a good problem to have. Like mm-hmm. the depth at running back, the depth at wide receiver. Obviously, like the Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, and they're both healthy. Of like, how do you get both of them on the field? Offensive line, you're trying to figure out a spot for Jordan Morgan. Obviously, like in the edge rusher, defensive tackle, I think we want to see a lot of those guys play better, but you're still trying to figure out the rotations there. The defensive backfield, you're trying to figure out ways to get Javon Bullard on the field. It's like, I don't know how many times we've heard, yep, it's a good problem to have. And running back is just another one of those hell quarterback might be as well with Malik Willis and the way that he's playing right now. So it's pretty incredible the depth that this team has developed. I want to go back to an article that you wrote actually last week that I think you wrote after we spoke last week, but it's still very appropriate. And I want to kind of go over it a little bit because I think it was very well written. Jeff Hafley's player first mentality and how it's not just the scheme. It's not just the X's and O's. It's also how he is handling the players that has led to this defense's success so far.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as we look back, right, what's contributing to this big, just quick turnaround, obviously X's and O's matter, all that stuff. I think it's the player first mentality that he has. It's the understanding of what each player does really well. And then again, pairing that with the X's and O's. All right, how do we utilize this strength to take advantage of that? How do we utilize that to switch up the game plan week to week? I think I mentioned this last week. He had a great quote where he said, it's not just here's the playbook, go learn it, let's go run it. I mean, this thing is ever evolving. And to truly unlock that adaptability of the playbook, you have to know who your players are, where they excel, where they don't excel, and find ways to put them in positions to do that. And then from building out the game plan, if you know where your players are really good, I mean, that's only going to enhance the game plan that you put together because now you're putting them in positions to be successful. They're not on the field overthinking. They're just reading and reacting because they're confident and they're comfortable in what they're being asked to do. And I think the third component to that, again, player-centric, is the communication. Sounds like very, very open lines of communication. Hafley mentioned last Thursday, he goes, you know, if Kenny Clark comes up to me and says, hey, I can beat the center on this type of play, he goes, one, why wouldn't I listen to a player like Kenny Clark who says, hey, I can go out here and do this? And Hafley also talked about when it gets towards the end of the week on Thursday, on Friday, it sounds like, you know, in the meeting rooms, it's like, all right, here's what we've implemented this week. Is anyone uncomfortable with what they're being asked to do in any of these situations? Because he goes, if someone raises their hand because they're unsure about their responsibility, he goes, why would I call it on Sunday? Again, it goes back right to the playing fast, the playing physical. If you're unsure in what, you know, in what you're doing or how you're supposed to react in a certain situation, you're not going to be playing as fast and physical as you can because you're thinking at that point. So then it becomes, all right, do we need to practice it more? Or are we just scrapping this play from the game plan and implementing something else? So I think that's been just such a massive, massive part of his success. The defense's early turnaround is it's players first in his mind. And when you hear him talk about the players. He knows each of their individual goals. He wants them to achieve those goals. Like that, you can tell that that means something to him. You know, if someone goes out and hits their sack numbers, interception numbers, whatever it means, that if he can play a part in helping elevate these guys to reach their individual goals, that means a lot to Jeff Hafley. And if individual players, multiple of them, are hitting their individual goals, that's really good for the defense as a whole.
Yeah, it really is. And I love the way that he goes about everything. There's just the leadership traits, the open lines of communication. From my experience, not just in football, but pretty much in everything, the biggest way that things break down is lack of lines of communication. Mm-hmm. And especially in football, whether that be, you know, those not having those meetings and having those open lines to say what you're feeling frustrated with or unsure of, whatever it might be, or on the field when you're not communicating with players on the field, that's when things tend to go very, very wrong. And I think keeping those open lines of communication and being just having the pulse on the team of where everyone's at and what they are trying to accomplish, man, it just sets everyone up for success. And you can tell these players very much want to play for Jeff Hafley and enjoy playing for Jeff Hafley. And I think when you're enjoying, like it's anyone, right? If they're enjoying their job, they're more likely to perform it at a higher level. Mm-hmm. And kind of see that with the defense right now.
Yeah. And on the defensive side of the ball, we just talked about Jason Vrabel, John Dunn, and their contributions on the sidelines. Hafley last Thursday talked about during the Texans game, Sean Duggan, he's the assistant linebackers coach. He's been with Hafley since his days at Boston College. During the Houston game, Hafley calls the plays from upstairs, and Duggan noticed something about what the linebackers were doing. What the offense was doing. And so he put the linebackers in a different position on ensuing play. And I think Hafley said it resulted in one of the sacks that they had or tackles for loss, something of that nature. But again, LaFleur-like in taking, you know, other feedback in. And Hafley even said, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I'm the smartest guy here. If someone has a good idea, I just want to win. And if it helps us win, we're going to do it. That's all that matters to him.
Going back to the Robert Saleh situation from last week, it's why I was so excited about just having another smart mind in the building or in the room or a phone call away, because no matter what, like the smarter people that you can have in the building, whether that's on the pro personnel side, whether that's in a scouting situation or the scouting department, whether that's on a coaching side, and especially for a coaching staff like Matt and like Rich Bisaccia and like Jeff Hafley that are so open to the diversity of ideas and you know, a good idea can come from anywhere. The smarter the people you can have in the building, the better off your team is going to be. And I think we've talked about it this entire episode today, where I'm sure there was some scout that went to vouch for Malik Willis, or somebody saw something that mm-hmm. they said, yes, let's go get that guy. Or whether it's, again, Jason Vrabel seeing the opportunity to pick up utilize that play and then putting it in. Like, these ideas can come from anyone and anywhere at any moment. And the fact that you have a lot of smart people in the building and they continue to add to that is immensely important. And again, it's why the organization is on such sound footing and that foundation is set. And now I think the question is, like, where's the ceiling and can they ultimately reach that highest level, the peak of the peak, and win that Super Bowl? But they have the pieces that they need in all aspects of this team, I think, to get there. Now it's just job not done yet.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Let's get to Packers Lions. What are you going to be watching for in this one? Obviously, injury is going to play a key part. The Detroit Lions are an unbelievable football team right now. Speaking of a lot of smart people in the building mm-hmm. and a lot of answers to the questions when it comes to all the different personnel that they have, they're incredible right now. So this is going to be a tough one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the big thing right now is we just talked about the defense. I mean, how does the defense hold up against this Detroit Lions offense? I mean, they can beat you on the ground. They can beat you through the air. Ben Johnson will dial up some wild plays that, you know, just completely seem off script in the moment of what's happening in the sequencing of the game. So going to be a really, really big test for the Green Bay Packers defense, the Lions' big play ability. So this is obviously going to be their biggest challenge of the season up to this point. And I think just looking back at Sunday's game, one of the kind of big takeaways or maybe questions from the defensive side of things that I have is that ability to generate pressure. Obviously, that's always important, but it feels particularly important in this game. So Jared Goff isn't sitting back there for 3-4 seconds with those receivers that they have. And we know the four-man pass rush has been up and down this season, to say the least, in terms of getting after the quarterback. And last week we were talking about the different blitzes, the stunts, the disguises that Hafley was using to generate pressure. It's not as if that went away in terms of usage against the Jacksonville Jaguars, but it wasn't quite working to the same effect as it did the week before. I think PFF had Trevor Lawrence under pressure like 25% of its dropbacks. And anytime you're getting under 30% from a defensive perspective, not very good.
No.
So as more of those pressures from Halfley are being put on tape, offenses are seeing that, right? They're going to have the opportunity to be more prepared for it, to have counters to it. So now I think the big question for the Packers in terms of getting after the quarterback is, one, how do you keep moving Rashawn Gary around, finding different avenues for him to get after the quarterback? And as you put more of these different pressures on tape, how are you countering the counters, right? How are you going to find ways to get after the quarterback? So coming out of that game, I think that's kind of my big question mark right now. And as we look ahead to the Lions game, obviously, pressure's king in the NFL, right? Get after the quarterback's the name of the game, but feel really, really important this week.
With Jared Goff, like you said, especially, and we've heard Matt LaFleur specifically talk about this. He coached Jared Goff with the Rams. He's very familiar with him, and he did coach Jared Goff with the Rams, right? I'm not making that up. I think he coached him. I think he did. But either way, like he's talked about this in the past, where if you let Jared Goff sit in the pocket, he will be an absolute assassin and just completely pick you apart. And he's talked specifically about having to find a way to get him off of his spot and not let him sit back there and be comfortable. And Detroit's done an unbelievable job of building a really good offensive line mm-hmm. around him. And you know what, Ben Johnson, it's time for you to be a head coach. Like, you should have taken a job by now. I'm very disappointed that you decided to stay at offensive coordinator, because it's very, very annoying. But the mind that he has, with the assassin-like qualities of Jared Goff in the pocket, with a great offensive line, and then guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown and Laporta as weapons, and Jahmyr Gibbs and what he's doing, and Montgomery, like, it's just, it's like, where do you even start as a defensive coordinator? But to your point, the place that you start is finding ways to get Jared Goff off of his spot, because that's one of the bigger Superman to Clark Kent transitions, where in the pocket, no pressure, he looks like the MVP of the league. He looks completely unstoppable. And there's nothing you can do. The ball is consistently accurate, efficient, on time, in rhythm, all of it. And then all of a sudden you get him off his spot and it looks entirely different. So there's no bigger key in this game to me than making sure that Jared Goff is not comfortable to the best of your ability.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like the getting Evan Williams back is in the mix for the Packers. I mean, that's going to be a big part. Just having that stability of the secondary and having their specific roles as well against this Lions team.
Yeah, I think so too. I was going to look that up. So Jared Goff, 2016 to 2020 in LA. Matt LaFleur, just double checking my work here so we don't have to edit anything out. In LA, 2017. All right, so offensive coordinator in 2017. So we are safe. Jared Goff, Matt LaFleur were together. And again, Matt was offensive coordinator at the time. So very, very familiar with Jared Goff. Paul, awesome stuff as always. Any final thoughts before we get out of here and get set to see this Packers team take on Detroit at the end of the week?
Nah, we hit on all the big stuff.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you as always. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
Yeah, thank you, Andy. Follow me on Twitter at Paul_Brettle. Head to ESPNLacrosse.com. All my Packers work, multiple articles up daily.
It is always incredible stuff. He does such a great job of doing the research and talking to a ton of people in the organization and in the locker room, and gets all this great information for us. And we're thankful that he's able to regurgitate some of it to us every Wednesday here on the Packaday podcast. Paul, you're the best. You can again find him at Paul_Brettle. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Paul and I, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.